also directly beside lakes and seas or rivers and streams, etc., one isn't permitted to build houses or other buildings and to live there. 36. With waters such as seas, lakes, rivers, brooks, and streams, etc., a greater minimum height above the water level must always be kept, which must be measured in such a way that even waves that are many meters high can't cause any damage or claim human lives. Billy: yes, that was it. Thanks. But now, I would like to ask you something again, which you must answer me as a doctor. It concerns the immune system of human beings, which is supposed to be aligned specifically, as you once explained. What's this all about, really? Quetzal, 37. With the immune system, it concerns a complex functional system for the preservation of the individual structure as well as for the defense against substances, etc., that are of an exogenous nature. 38. Furthermore, it also has the function of a continuous elimination of abnormal somatic cells, such as malignantly and, thus, viciously degenerated cells. 39. This is known as immune surveillance. 40. Also involved in this are the organs of the lymphatic system, distributed throughout the cells and molecules of the entire organism, and in particular, the leukocytes are to be mentioned. 41. Contrary to the erroneous opinion of the earthly medical sciences, the defense mechanisms of the immune system that is innate to the human being are aligned specifically, as this is also true of the acquired and natural immune system. 42. Always in accordance with the defense mechanisms, both the innate as well as the acquired immune system produce specific antibodies, resulting in either an immunity against certain pathogens or a defensive reaction, whereby killer cells carry out the defense work and the immune work. 43. The entire immune system of an innate, acquired, and natural form, which is owned by all vertebrate life forms, is specifically designed in every respect, so therefore, for every kind of pathogen and other health hazardous element, etc., specific defense factors are given. 44. Nevertheless, it is also given that some defensive elements are responsible for multiple pathogens or other health hazardous factors and substances, etc. Billy: with the different epidemics and diseases appearing in the coming time, the immune system in humans, however, will often or even completely fail, as you already explained before, like the epidemic that's been known by America as AIDS since 1981 and the resulting varieties. Furthermore, I remember the name Ebola virus as well as the Legionnaire's disease that appeared for the first time in America in 1976 and something that you called the Nile epidemic or something similar. Also, you said that tuberculosis and plague as well as cholera, etc., will spread again. Quetzal, 45. The name was West Nile virus. 46. An epidemic that will be introduced to America and spread itself there. 47. Nevertheless, many other diseases and epidemics will still appear all over the world, and indeed, even those which have been regarded as eradicated up to now, as I have actually explained. 48. Certain names and designations for diseases and epidemics will first be created, however, in the coming time, and to be sure, when these appear. 49. At later times, diseases and epidemics from outer space and from other planets and moons will also be introduced on the Earth through the Earth people. Billy: this will hardly be able to be avoided. Despite all precautionary measures, if the scientists don't find better ways than before to prevent the introduction of extraterrestrial bacteria and viruses and other microorganisms, etc. Introductions and deposits of alien microorganisms and many other things of all kinds can also occur, however, through asteroids and meteors, which crash down on the Earth, as well as through comets' tails, into whose immediate area the Earth comes. But finally, clouds of microorganisms must also be taken into consideration, which drift through space and arrive into the area of our planet and penetrate down to the surface and even into the soil. At least, that's how I understood Sfuth's explanations in my boyhood. Quetzal, 50. That is correct. Billy, the calash tree, which is, indeed, extinct, was an enormous acacia tree, under which a small village found a good place. What, however, is the so-called moringa tree, of which you once spoke and of which you said that it would one day become of great importance for the earth person? To this day, I still haven't heard or read anything about this tree or its fruits and seeds being used in some way. Quetzal, 51. With the moringa tree, it concerns a so-called medicinal tree, which grows extremely quickly, about 3 meters in height per year. 52. The tree mainly grows in South Asia and in North Africa and contains active ingredients that can be used by the earth people against anemia as well as against hypertension and diabetes. 53. The various active ingredients, however, can also be used for the building and strengthening of the immune system. 54. The related building of the immune defense strengthening can also provide, among many other possibilities, a successful means against AIDS. 55. The varieties of the tree also provide further food for humans and animals, whereby the nutrients are extremely rich in vitamin C and calcium. 56. In addition, the seeds of the moringa trees are extremely oily, whereby the oil can be used, among various other possibilities, as a lubricant and as fuel for machinery. 57. Furthermore, dirty water can also be cleaned with the seeds of the tree, and indeed, very much better than what any chemical can do. 58. All of these things, nevertheless, aren't the only possibilities and benefits that this tree and its seeds and fruits provide, for there are still several more. Billy, that is interesting. Then one can also hope that a certain progress develops from this in some way for the Earth people. Quetzal, 59. As our probability calculations yield, that will actually be the case. Billy, since we're already talking about large trees, I would like to ask you a question about the dinosaurs again. Which ones were the largest and where did they live? Quetzal, 60. The largest plant-eating dinosaurs lived in what is now Patagonia. 61. These were the so-called long-necked dinosaurs, whose largest specimens reached up to 60 meters in length and exhibited a weight of around 135 tons. 62. This was the largest land animal that ever existed on the Earth. Billy, and what about the time, when did these animals live? And were there any predatory dinosaurs that kill these magnificent animals? Have any skeletons, etc. of such giant beasts already been found by the earthly paleontologists? Quetzal, 63. To my knowledge, still no such findings have been made by the earthly paleontologists. 64. And as for the time when these giant animals lived, this must have been, to my knowledge, around 100 million years ago. 65. The long-necked dinosaurs possessed tails that were about as long as their necks were to their heads. 66. At the same time, there also lived giant predatory dinosaurs, which we call Titan predatory dinosaurs or Titans predatory dinosaurs, which had a size of up to 19 meters. Billy, thus, so to speak, a Tyrannotitanosaurus emperor, if I may translate that so freely. So a creature that must have been a lot larger than the Tyrannosaurus rex. But how was it now? Did these gigantic predatory dinosaurs also hunt the giant long-necked dinosaurs? If so, how did this happen? It is always claimed by our earthly scientists that the large predatory dinosaurs, even the great Tyrannosaurus rex, were loners and also would have hunted as such. I can't understand that and, thus, can't accept it as given, for if these beasts actually hunted the giant herbivores, which I strongly accept, then they couldn't have reliably done so as individual hunters because they would have had no chance against the giant animals. Thus, according to my understanding, it only could have been such that the predatory dinosaurs hunted with certainty in packs. Now, was that actually so, or am I mistaken? At the same time, I also think of the experiences on my great journey with Samjay Santur, where I could observe on the primeval world how the large predatory dinosaurs hunted and tore large herbivores in packs. This must have happened in the same way on the Earth during the time of the dinosaurs, or in this respect, am I completely on the wrong track with my opinion? Quetzal, 67. What you saw on your great journey, that likewise occurred in the primeval times on Earth. 68. There were also many different genera and species of predatory dinosaurs on Earth, and indeed, very small, medium, large, and such that must be designated as giants, titans, and colossi, like the Tyrannosaurus rex and the Tyrannotitanosaurus emperors, as you designate these predatory dinosaurs appropriately. 69. Between these two predatory dinosaurs, however, there was one other giant dinosaur on Earth, which we name Gigantic Dinosaur, which reached a size of up to 14 meters. 70. And you're actually correct with your acceptance that all these enormous, gigantic, and titanic dinosaurs were also no loners but rather pack animals that also lived in packs and hunted as such and tore their victims, whereby these victims, as you suppose, also included the large and largest plant eaters, like even the long-necked dinosaurs. Billy, so one must speak practically of at least three different giant predatory dinosaurs, and to be sure, of the Tyrannosaurus rex, of the Tyrannosaurus gigantus, and of the Tyrannotitanosaurus emperor, as I now call the critters. Perhaps the earthly scientists will crush me with their cars and insult me into the ground as a layman, but I now name the beasts just like that. Quetzal, 71. That is correct. 72. And you can actually name the animals according to your free will, as you wish. Billy, nice. Then something else, do I remember correctly, Tua gave me the information when we were at Neptune, that on this planet, storms prevail, which reach 2,000 kilometers per hour. Quetzal, 73. Your recollection is correct. Billy, good, then I would like to ask you something in reference to Egyptian mummy tombs. It is always maintained that the clairvoyant case, or whatever his name is to have said that underground cities and large mummy tombs, etc. are still buried in Egypt. What is to be made of this? Quetzal, 74. Such cities and tombs actually exist, but they haven't been found up to the current time. 75. For example, one of the largest mummy tombs, which comes from the 1st and 2nd century AD, is located in the Egyptian place of Bahariyur. 76. In this tomb, about 10,000 mummies are buried, together with a lot of gold. Billy, and? Have the archaeologists not found anything there yet, or are the graves already robbed? Quetzal, 77. So far, the earthly archaeologists still have no notion or even knowledge of this large tomb. Billy, however, the giant tomb will certainly be found one day, right? Quetzal, 78. I have no information about that. Billy, then in relation to this, have you made no looks into the future or probability calculations or even journeys into the future or otherwise made any clarifications that could give enlightenment in this respect? Quetzal, 79. No, until now, it was not of importance for us. Billy, well, then just not. It also isn't so important. Quetzal, 80. As I have determined time and again, the Earth people exercise very much criticism toward their neighbors. 81. Since I cannot find my way to it, I would like to ask you for your opinion. 82. Is the criticism, just as it is applied by the Earth person, really necessary or just a bad habit? 83. My understanding for this is lacking very much. Billy, the practicing of criticism, that is the criticizing of the Earth people against their neighbors, corresponds to a very bad habit, which is founded in the desire to be better and the desire to know better than one's neighbors. The criticizers are, thus, of the false belief that they are better or could be somewhat better or would know better, etc. than those whom they criticize. Thus, no so-called healthy assessment is practiced, which exists in the so-called art of assessment, through which a neutral assessment of a person or thing takes place. Rather, a criticism occurs, which truly consists of pointing out alleged or genuine errors in a derogatory manner, in order to affect one's neighbors with it psychologically or in any way. This is also true for the so-called professional critics, who have the audacity to criticize people and their labors and works, etc., as well as things and stuff of any kind in their wrong and megalomaniacal conceit and think that they would understand something of the matter concerned. Critique or criticism truly exhibits in no way the form of an assessment or art of assessment and doesn't rest in an examination and in an insight, but rather is grounded in a chronic, habitual, derogatory laceration and abasement of that which is criticized. This, however, has nothing to do with the assertion and misrepresentation of the earthly philosophers that it would concern an assessment, an examination, and an insight, as well as an evaluation. These values do not find their authorization in critique or criticism, but solely in the neutral art of assessment and in the neutral assessment evaluation. But critique or criticism doesn't know these values because solely a judgment follows from it, through which a person claims to classify something as given or not given, as good or bad, as negative or positive, or as genuine or false and, accordingly, to make a decision autocratically. At the same time, an assessment is completely omitted because neither the negatives nor the positives are effectively seen in their true form. In contrast to this are the assessment and evaluation, through which not only the negatives but also the positives become seen, recognized, assessed, and evaluated. Through this, someone or someone's action, labor, work, thing, or matter, etc. doesn't just simply become criticized and, thus, torn up into the air, so that the whole thing truly only corresponds to a lousy, biased, hateful, autocratic, and arrogant intolerance. This also refers to the opinion and life attitude as well as to the world view of the people and also how they dress, what hobbies and pleasures, etc. they have, and what kinds of lifestyles they maintain, because all these things, which are really of the purest private nature, are also complained of by the troublemaking critics and are mercilessly and self-righteously torn apart in a yelping manner because they regard themselves as better and more clever than they concede this to their neighbors, even though they themselves are usually being straw-dumb and stupid and have a crude attitude toward life and toward their fellow human beings. Quetzal, 84. Your remarks make many things clear to me. Billy, with the Earth people, unfortunately, is it usually the case that they let criticism prevail rather than reason? It should rightly be so, that the opinion of a person is accepted and respected because he can always correct it himself if it should be wrong and he becomes aware of this fact. However, critics don't note this freedom of human beings but rather force them into a pattern that is foreign to them through their criticism. Quetzal, 85. That is correct. 86. But now, my friend, I still have to discuss a few things with you that shouldn't be of an official nature. 87. So let's now talk about these concerns. 222nd Contact, Wednesday, February 3, 1988, 4:10 a.m. Billy, dear friend, yesterday, I was asked a question about the Princess of Monte Carlo, that is, of Monaco, just with respect to the American former actress Grace Patricia Kelly, who received the sovereign title and the name Grimaldi through her marriage with Prince Rainier III of Monaco. The princess had an accident with her car on the 13th of September, 1982 during a return trip from the royal summer residence La Turbie to Monaco, along with her 17-year-old daughter Stephanie. The next day, on the 14th of September, she succumbed to her serious injuries. The princess and her vehicle went off the road in a hairpin curve, fell down a slope, and flipped over several times. Daughter Stephanie had only suffered minor injuries, and it was said that she had driven the car without authorization. And now, exactly concerning this, I was asked whether this had actually been the case. At that time, to my knowledge, you sought to clarify the matter, for whatever reasons. Quetzal, 1. That is correct. 2. My clarification occurred as a result of my own interests. 3. What I have fathomed with this, however, has no relevance at all to the assertion that the prince's daughter Stefani had driven the crashed vehicle. 4. The truth and the reality is that Princess Grace Patricia Kelly, or rather Grimaldi, suffered a sudden, severe brain hemorrhage, which acted like a sudden severe stroke and caused an immediate loss of consciousness, through which, of course, also the control of her vehicle was lost, and she unavoidably came to the serious accident. Billy, that sounds logical. It also seemed illogical to me that Mrs. Kelly should have left her daughter, who was still a minor, behind the wheel. But since we're already talking about such things, I would like to concern you once again with regard to a question that appeals to your medical and psychiatric knowledge. Recently, I had to concern myself another time with the so-called voices, and to be sure, in reference to a man from New Zealand. His name is Kiwi, just as also the Chinese kiwi fruit is called, namely the fruit of the Chinese gooseberry shrub, or in the language of the Maori, the New Zealand kiwi bird, a nocturnal, flightless ratite. The long and short of it, to my knowledge, the hearing of voices concerns a form of schizophrenia, through which those who are afflicted by it hear a voice or multiple voices in their heads or something. Quetzal, 5. That is also correct. 6. With the hearing of voices, it concerns a form of schizophrenia, through which acoustic hallucinations are produced in the form of a voice or even several human voices, animal sounds, or thing-related tones, which are heard by the people afflicted by this form of schizophrenia in their consciousnesses because it has fallen to a schizophrenic disorder. 7. Those who are afflicted by this form of schizophrenia supposed to be listeners of conversations or to perceive any other sounds, noises, tones, or even music in an allegedly real form. 8. In severe cases of this type of schizophrenia, even alleged dialogues occur between the hallucinatory voices and schizophrenic people, which also often leads to the fact that those afflicted by this disease of consciousness respond to alleged commands of the hallucinatory voices and carry out and commit actions and deeds that aren't comprehensible for normally healthy people. 9. Thus, homicides of this kind appear not infrequently in a simple or serial form because the murder or killing of humans and animals or the destruction of pictures and articles, etc. are ordered by the alleged hallucinatory communication of the putative hallucinatory voices. 10. An occurrence, through which confused, sick, deranged, and illogical as well as reason poor thinking is caused with this form of schizophrenia in certain respects. 11. A condition that doesn't have to be permanently present but which can also only appear sporadically. 12. Those afflicted by this may even be people of good education, because the schizophrenia exhibits a split consciousness, which is determined not by the intelligence but by hallucinations and, thus, by an impairment of consciousness or by a pathological change in the state of consciousness. 13. In harmless cases, the form of schizophrenia of the hearing of voices appears with the so-called dead speakers, ghost speakers, other world speakers and extraterrestrial speakers, who, from time to time, through inner voices, even through the hearing of voices, supposedly accept that they would hear voices of the dead, ghosts, demons, otherworldly ones, and extraterrestrials and would even communicate with these. 14. On Earth, you call such people mediums, necromancers, and channelers, etc., but who, as explained, truly only have inner voices and believe that they would receive commands or messages from these and even communicate with them. 15. Another form of this illness of consciousness also causes putative telepathic voices through unrealistic forms of thought and beliefs, by what means those afflicted by this illness believe that they would stand in telepathic connection with any beings of a worldly, otherworldly, or other dimensioned or extraterrestrial form. 16. Those afflicted by these forms of delusion believe that their delusions are real. 17. Moreover, on the outside, they appear completely normal to their fellow human beings, who judge the false assertions of the schizophrenics as given and, thus, classify those who are sick in consciousness as completely normal, which, as a rule, is also typical of the professionals, such as psychologists and psychiatrists, who can also be deceived just like the layman. Billy, thanks. Your professional explanation will certainly open the eyes of very many people. But since you already speak of dead speakers, that is of necromancers, I would still like to ask a question in reference to a particular deceased person, if you know something about him. It concerns Leonardo da Vinci, which is certainly a name known to you. One asked me if I would know who his father and mother were. Two explained to me on my great journey that Leonardo was the illegitimate offspring from a union of his father, Piero da Vinci, with a beautiful slave girl from the Orient, but I didn't want to answer the question in this way before I had inquired with you again, and indeed, because I'm no longer quite sure if I remember Tua's explanation correctly. You know that through my health collapse in the year 1982, my memory has suffered enormously, so I sometimes confuse some things. Quetzal, 18. Your recollection corresponds to the truth, so therefore, you can transmit a useful explanation. Billy, Mrs. Souter will be pleased about that. Quetzal, 19. Do you speak of Mrs. Marianne Souter, who found her life again through your help? Billy, yes, I mean this Mrs. Souter. She called me and asked the question. She has helped me very much financially on a loan, in order to be able to construct the center in general. Today, she lives at times in India, Pakistan, Nepal, and in Europe. Quetzal, 20. She owes you her life and will never forget that. 21. I know this because I know the story about her and you, and I have concerned myself with her character. Billy, Sam Jace once spoke of the fact that in the distant future, somewhere in the mountains of the Rhine Valley, a volcano will break out, which is currently inactive but which will also become active in the subsoil, like also various volcanoes somewhere in Germany, which will also become active again in the distant future. One has also asked me about this, but unfortunately, I no longer know what place in Germany was meant. Quetzal, 22. It isn't a place but rather an entire area, which is designated as Eiffel. 23. There prevails a great slumbering of underground volcanism, which will produce powerful above-ground eruptions again in the distant future and destroy entire landscapes. Billy, yes, exactly, that was the name. Then still another question. Gilgamesh was descended from a race that came from a galaxy that is still unknown on Earth. Moreover, he was about 3 meters tall. How can it be that he still lives on Earth today unrecognized? Relatively seen to the Earth person, he also doesn't age, for he, as you've explained, is 50,000 years old or more. And since you know him so well and also have the possibility of taking him back to his world, why don't you do this? Quetzal, 24. You are mistaken in reference to the fact that the home galaxy of Gilgamesh is unknown on Earth because it was already discovered in the year 1781 by an astronomer named McCain. 25. This is a somewhat oval spiral galaxy, which is simply called M94, NGC 4736 by the earthly astro-scientists and which is seen about 20 million light-years away from the Earth. Billy, in our space-time configuration? Quetzal, 26. That is correct. 27. But listen further, 28. With Gilgamesh's people, it concerned a race of morphogenetic ones, whose special ability was to change their shape and size. 29. A process that took several months for each occurrence, however. Billy, first of all, why do you speak of concerned and was? And secondly, does your explanation with regard to the morphogenetic ones mean that it concerns a morphogenesis, precisely in terms of biological morphology? Morphogenesis, nevertheless, refers to the formation of an organism or life form during his or her development, whereby everything depends on the hereditary predisposition and on the environment. Do you mean this? Quetzal, 30. No, that is not the meaning of my words, rather, I speak of a shape-shifting that can be carried out arbitrarily during normal existence.